passing out. Okay. Page 100. Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 2, Contents of the Gita Summarized, 27. Jatasya.
Jatasya.
Of one who has taken birth.
He.
Ciertamente.
Ciertamente.
In Spanish.
Dhruvaha.
Un hecho. Mrityu. Muerte.
Dhruvam.
También es un hecho.
Janma.
Nacimiento.
Mrtasya.
De la muerte.
Cha.
También.
También.
Tasmat. I don't know what that is.
Entonces.
Aparihare. Okay.
Of that which is unavoidable.
De lo que es inevitable. Yeah.
Arte.
In the matter.
Na.
Do not. Tuam. You. Shochitum. To lament. Arhasi.
Deserve.
Okay. Jatasya hi dhruvo mrityur. Dhruvam janma mrityasya cha. Tasmada pariharjayate. Natvam sochitum arhasi. Bolie.
Jatasya hi dhruvam mrityur. Dhruvam janma mrityasya cha.
Tasmada pariharyate.
Natvam shochitam arhasi.
Jatasya hi dhruvam mrityur. Dhruvam janma mrityasya cha.
Tasmada pariharyate.
Natvam shochitum arhasi.
Jatasya hi dhruvam mrityur. Dhruvam janma mrityasya cha.
Tasmada pariharyate.
Natvam shochitam arhasi.
Anybody else? It's okay. So, Prabhupada ki. And the translation is, one who has taken his birth is sure to die, and after death, one is sure to take birth again. Therefore, in the unavoidable discharge of your duty, you should not lament. Please repeat. One who has taken his birth is sure to die.
One who has taken his birth is sure to die.
And after death, one is sure to take birth again.
And after death, one is sure to take birth again.
Therefore, in the unavoidable discharge of your duty,
you should not lament.
I always say unavoidable. What is dharma? Dharma? What is duty here in the Sanskrit? Duty in the Sanskrit. Mrityu dhruvam. Dhruvam is also a fact. Janma, mrityu, tasmat, paryas, unavoidable. Arte, in the matter of. So it doesn't say duty. Yeah. Purport. One has to take birth according to one's activities of life. And after finishing one's term of activities, one has to die to take birth for the next. In this way, one is going through one cycle of birth and death after another without liberation. This cycle of birth and death does not, however, support unnecessary murder, slaughter, and war. But at the same time, violence and war are inevitable factors in human society for keeping law and order. The Battle of Kurukshetra, being the will of the Supreme, was an inevitable event, and to fight for the right cause is the duty of a Kshatriya. Why should he be afraid of or aggrieved at the death of his relatives, since he was discharging his proper duty? He did not deserve to break the law, thereby becoming subjected to the reactions of simple acts, which he was so afraid. He did not deserve to break the law? By avoiding the discharge of his proper duty, he would not be able to stop the death of his relatives. He would be degraded due to his selection of the wrong path of action. 9. So, chapter 1's the problem, right? This is the, here we get this book called Bhagavad Gita. And this part right here, and some of the second chapter, is the problem, right? See there? There's a problem, okay? Now, this part over here, this is the solution. Yeah, but it doesn't make much sense. The solution part doesn't make much sense, right, unless you know the problem, right? Like that, you know. The letters from Prabhupada, for example, where he says, "Yes, I have received your letter, and you should eat fruit and milk," like that. And so, very good for you. In other words, say, "Oh, Prabhupada's recommending eating fruit and milk." If you don't know what the guy's problem was, like that. So on. It's like hearing half a phone conversation, you know. So what's the problem? What's the problem here? Ask your students here. Yeah. He's a greatly advanced pundit. His shirt says that right there, greatly advanced pundit. Right? Okay. Right.
Yeah. Arjun is bewildered because he doesn't know what to do. Like whether he should kill his relatives or he should just fight and or he should just keep down all the weapons and not do anything.
Yeah.
So basically, he's confused about his duty. That is the problem.
Okay. So he has a problem over here. Can you give more enlightenment about what is Arjuna's problem? Is it a universal problem?
Yeah, people don't know what their real duties are probably.
Yeah?
People have a dilemma of what is right, what is wrong, what should come be ahead of, I mean, should relatives come before his duties? Or who do we serve?
Yeah. In the beginning, who does he want to serve? In the beginning. Yeah? He goes there, and why is he there? Why is he? Yeah, and somebody else too. Draupadi.
Yeah.
And she, as far as I know, she's more of an impetus than Yudhisthira at that point, because you know she her hair is open. She said, "I'm a widow. I don't have any husbands. If I had a husband, this wouldn't have happened to me. I'd have done something about it, you know. So I'm a widow." You know? And so she was really, you know, putting the screws to them for 17 years or whatever, like that. Yeah. So, again, the beginning is in Maya. He's in the Maya in the mode of goodness, right? You know, you're following all these things, but finally, I can be a karmi, right? I can enjoy the fruits of my activities, right? Every year, there's a few revenge movies that come out, right? You know, the teachers who get revenge from their students, I guess lawyers who get revenge against the judges or something. But it's such satisfaction, right? You know, righteous revenge is, you know, so wonderful, you know. So Arjuna has suffered for so long, right? And they've gone through so many things. There's nobody who can criticize them in terms of not, you know, trying to solve the problem in a fair fashion like that. So finally Arjuna is so happy, at last, I'm going to kill all these guys or defeat them and take their helmets and drop them at Draupadi's feet. And she'll say, "Thank you, Arjuna." And tie her hair up and I'll feel so good. You know, and my brother also too. He's such a, you know, my brother's such a wonderful person. My big brother, right? You know, these guys harassed him too. And who's even more happy than Arjuna?
Bhima.
Yeah, he's sitting around with his club, like looking at his watch, like that. You know. Yeah. So he takes him right in front. Arjuna says, "Take me in front of these rascals." He was here, so he takes him right in front of. Yeah, his guru and his grandfather. Then he realizes what it means to be a karmi. Right? If my wife's going to tie her hair up, somebody else's wives are going to untie their hair. Yeah. So what's his solution? Yeah, become a jnani, right? Renounce everything. Walk away from it all. Can he do that? Sit and chant japa all day. How big is Arjuna in proportion to modern people? Is he this big?
He's twice.
About this, maybe. Yeah, like Arnold Schwarzenegger when he was younger. Yeah, but also not slow either. Yeah, I mean, as soon as he came here, he'd look at me. You got a problem with the government, city government here? Let's go talk to them. How about this and that? Yeah. No, he's very intelligent, everything else, very sharp-minded. So he can't sit around and go to the forest, you know, like Vyasadeva. So he's saying in American English, what, damned if you do and damned if you don't. Like that. So he can't become a karmi, he can't become a jnani. So then what does he do? Yeah, that's why he's fortunate like that, and please solve his problem, you know. So that's Bhagavad Gita, is, you know, Prahlad Maharaj says the greatest, I've suffered so many things, right? Life after life, heat, cold, thirst, distress, but the greatest pain is separation from people you love. So he may not love these people, you know, but they're his cousins, his relatives, like that, or the Maltese Falcon, or all these odd sources. There's a very famous, Dashiell Hammett, the very famous American mystery novel writer, like detective novel writer, and I remember one time it was the Maltese Falcon. And he says somebody killed his partner. You know, he said he may not have been a nice guy, he may not even have liked him, but he was your partner, and somebody killed him, and you got to do something about it. It's the same way. I may not like them, you know, they may not be nice people, but they're my cousins and my nephews, like that. And that's what Arjuna is coming down to. He's a very good person. And then he's feeling this, you know, how can I kill my nephews? And what can they do against me? Against me, they're like, defenseless. And I'm going to go kill my own nephews like that, like slaughter them like that. God, I can't do this. You know? And so then he's, you know, so it's a very serious thing. You know? Well, you should just fight and kill them. Very serious. You know? So then, also he realizes the other alternative is also not practical, just to walk away from the whole thing and renounce everything like that. So finally he surrenders to Krishna. This is the same theme as Hamlet. Hamlet had the same problem like that. You can tell the story of Hamlet,
hello,
in the same way as Arjuna, and it's exactly the same problem. He has to chastise his mother, his family members. He has to kill his family members. He's not sure what is the actual right thing to do. To be or not to be, that is the question. Whether it is nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, or to take arms against a sea of Kauravas, and by opposing in them, or to die, to sleep. Ah, but who knows what dreams may come, you know, after we've left this place. I would count myself king of infinite space, bound up in a nutshell, if only I did not have bad dreams. Yeah. So he can't, he's going to take it with him. He can't walk away from it. You know. So has Krishna given a solution so far? Yeah. What have you discussed so far? What's Krishna talked about so far?
Atma, the qualities of soul.
Yeah.
Quality of material body.
Yeah. Yeah. But he's talking about duty here. Yeah. Of course, in the Sanskrit, there's no duty. There's sometimes Prabhupada gives these like contextual translations like that. One thing that occurs here, the word sociati has been appearing for about three or four texts like that, four or five texts. You know. Is that one of the very first instructions he gives him? I mean, the very first thing he says, right? Yeah. It's lamentation like that, the very first thing. What's he calling him in the very first text? His very first instruction to him, he calls him, what does he call him? No. Before that. Very first text, when he surrenders. Yeah, it says pundit. Yeah? It's like two police officers in New York, you know, dealing with all this drug traffic and the heavy people and everything else. And one of them, they had to go do something and arrest some people or, you know, go like that. And some guy starts talking all this philosophy. The other cop says, "Hey, Rabbi." So, you know, Arjuna's not a pundit, you know. Krishna's being sarcastic with, "Hey, pundit." Like that. He's here with more weapons than all, you know, the U.S. Army and Navy combined like that. Tied to his belt, and he says, "Hey, let's talk about this, guys." Stop and talk about all these things, you know. It's like, you know. He says, "Hey, pundit," you know. But don't lament, right? Yeah, no sociati. So he's basically talking about that, freedom from distress, you know, doing your duty, you know. As far as I know, in this level, so next, what's he going to introduce next? So far he's talking about Sankhya, distinguishing the soul from the body and everything else like that. He's talking a little bit about the dynamics of the thing. Usually in physics, first they teach you statics, what is relationships, then dynamics. So he hasn't talked too much about the activity of the soul, you know. But he's talking about a little bit here, right? That the soul moves through the bodies like that, you know, like that. And it's being forced to move, right? It's automatic, and you know, we're being carried by this thing like that, you know. But he's talking about dharma, right? At least Prabhupada is, right? Yeah. So what is he suggesting? What is his suggestion?
Fight.
Yeah? Or more generally, do your duty. Right? Yeah, do your duty like that. But then in the second half, he introduces what? He goes to Sankhya too?
Buddhi.
Yeah, Buddhi Yoga. Yeah, Buddhi. So what is Buddhi Yoga? As far as I can tell, first he glorifies it, then he talks about people who don't follow it. There's one verse, as far as I can tell, where he's actually saying what it is. You know what that is? What that verse is? Huh? It's a little bit ahead here. About 236 to 37 is the middle, where he says, "This, you know, fight for the sake of fighting." Right? Where is that? Yeah, 38 is the one where then the end of this first section. Sukha dukkha samekritva laba labao jaya jayao. Tato yudya yujashva naivam papam abapshasi. Yudya yujashva. Fight for fighting. That's not a very logical explanation, but it's kind of like, you know, live for living. Yeah, eat for eating. Okay, that's what I've described so far. And then finally, he's talking about Buddha Yoga in the beginning, saying it's not there's no loss in this path. You know, those who are resolute or one-minded, other people are deviating from this and that, you know. Yeah, it serves all the purposes. And then 47, as far as I know, is the one. Karmani Evadi Kar. That's one? You mentioned?
That's one, yeah. Then the very next verse says, Yoga Uchite. That's what's called yoga, that equanimity.
Yeah, perform your duty equipoised, or Arjuna, abandoning all attachments. Yeah, same thing, right. Yeah. So, what is it? You have a right to perform your prescribed duty, but you are not entitled to the fruits, like that. Yeah. So he has, as a warrior, he has a right to do this. He can fight, you know. But the fruits, okay, that's the problem. That's where his problem is coming from, right? Because he wants to enjoy the fruits, right, of his dharma. You're raising your children, okay, when they're old, they'll take care of me. This is fair. This is a karmi. I take care of my children, and when they're little, when I'm old, they take care of me. And that's a karmi, right? But what's a karma yogi? There's a difference between being a karmi and a karma yogi.
He does not enjoy
the fruits. No. Okay, if you grow up and become a Hare Krishna devotee and abandon me, it's okay. I'll still do my duty. And I have a right to do that. It's easier to abandon, it's easier to give up the result of your activity than it is to give up the mode of working. Right? You know, some lady, she may be a very nice devotee in the temple and making flower garlands and distributing books, but she doesn't feel like she's really doing something real. Like, you know, unless I have kids and I can take care of them and, you know, educate them with good character and serve my husband, then I feel like I'm doing something, you know. Or somebody, a kshatriya, the same way. He can sacrifice the results. Duryodhana wants to enjoy the results. He wants to ride on the big elephant. Everybody should throw flowers at him and sing. But Arjuna, no. I'll put Krishna on the elephant like that. But I got to do something, right? Otherwise, I don't feel like I'm, you know, alive, you know. So today I worked a long time on a PowerPoint show for this presentation in South America. And it was, you know, I totally forgot Krishna while I was doing it, like more or less. Because I'm thinking about the work, it's related to Krishna. But I wasn't like specifically thinking consciously pleasing Krishna. So it wasn't pure devotional service, it was karma yoga. I was doing what I like to do and sacrificing the results to Krishna, like that. You know? So Jani Vas is working in the university and they're teaching him to be a karmi and, you know, do what you like to do and use the results for Time Warner or Hewlett Packard or something and get some money, right? So I could do that also, you know. I discovered, you know. So this is karma yoga, right? And it's as it becomes more mature, then you want to get knowledge, attachment, and it becomes meditation, and finally pure bhakti yoga, you know. So it's all the same thing, right? Different levels. But in the beginning, he's saying he's not talking about that. He says this: do your duty because it's your duty, right? And don't be attached to the results. And what else? One more thing: never consider yourself the cause of. The fruits like that, yeah. Sridhar Maharaj, Prabhupada and Gaurabhadra, he said, there's so many living entities, cooperating to produce the environment, no? You know, cockroaches, grass, you know, demigods. Yeah. So how on earth can you possibly think that you're causing whatever results to happen like that, you know? Even your thoughts are coming. Where are your thoughts coming from, right? You know, I don't know. Yeah. So you have a right to perform your prescribed duty, right? You have a right to do that. But you are not entitled to the fruits of action. Never consider yourself the cause of the results of your activities, and never be attached to not doing your duty. So that's the Bodhi Yoga, right? But it's pretty impersonal because there's nobody enjoying any of this stuff still. Like just doing it detached, you know. So where's the first time in the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says, do it for me?
Well, he says, Tani Sarvani Sanyamya Yukta Asita Matparaha.
Yeah.
You say Matparaha, that's verse like 261, I think.
Yeah. So he gives a little hint there, Matparaha, in relationship to me, like that.
But it's still just a hint.
So I think 330 is the first time. Yeah. Second chapter, he finishes off. Okay, this is you, this is the body. Let's look at things properly. First off, we're talking about Bhishma, we're talking about Drona, we're talking about your cousins, talking about you. We're talking about the person, not the body. Get that straight. Yeah, okay. Now, the body is eternal. Okay. Now, there's Dharma, another thing, the mechanic. There's the Prakriti, there's the Atma, right? All the Atmas are different. Prakriti is changing, is temporary, and the Atma is eternal. And there's the dynamic, which is karma, or dharma, they're very closely related like that, you know? Yeah. So, follow the dharma, follow the karma, right? Engage your body in that way, and there'll be no reaction like that, yeah? But so Prabhupada says at the end of chapter 2, he says, Krishna hasn't given enough of a detailed idea for Arjuna to really apply it like that. And so therefore, he's confused. So in chapter 3, he says, Prabhupada says, we come to vritti, right? Professional devotional service. Now he's showing him as a kshatriya, and I'm going to show you how to do it like that. First off, everybody here, everybody else exists on food grains, okay? Food grains come from?
Huh?
Okay, rain comes from?
Sacrifice.
Sacrifice comes from? Prescribed duties. Ah, close enough. Prescribed duties come from? In the Vedas, like that. You know? Okay, so you can understand what your prescribed duty is from the Dharma Shastras. Which Dharma Shastras does Prabhupada recommend? There's so many Dharma Shastras, 81 sometimes, or 24. Manu Samhita, yeah? But that's more for Satya Yuga, it's very strict. And in Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, he also recommends Parashara's Dharma Shastra, yeah? And that's more for Kali Yuga, yeah? For example, if a lady has a husband, and he dies, or he goes to a foreign country, or he takes sannyas, or else has a big moral fall down, then after 6 years, she can remarry. And it's still dharma, it's still progressive like that. This is the whole Hamlet too, right? How long did it take for Hamlet's mother to remarry?
Within 2 months.
Hamlet said.
Twice 2 months. Nay, it was twice 2 months.
Hamlet said, the cooked meat from the funeral feast did but do double duty as cold cuts at the wedding feast.
Rift.
Yeah, that's quick, man. Yeah.
But Ophelia said May is twice 2 months.
Yeah, they're giving different things there. Yeah. Okay, so Parashara says, okay, a lady, you know, after six years, she can remarry like that. But it's third class, but it's progressive. Second class, she doesn't get remarried, but she enjoys life. She gets a surfboard, she, you know, has a good time like that. You know. And first class is if she follows her departed Lord in the same fire of sacrifice. So did Vishnu Priya do that? Yeah? She did. He became a sannyas and she became a sannyasini. Well, he was preaching the glories of the holy name. Was she also showing the glories of the holy name? What was her vow?
She would chant every mantra she would take one grain of rice into the pile, and then at the end of the day she would eat
3 o'clock.
Three o'clock,
whatever she chanted. It's nice to try some on Vishnu Priya's disappearance day, try that. Like, I see how much rice you're going to go over. Well, I don't know how much it is. 1,728 grains of rice. I try to figure it out what it was like, you know, weigh like 25 grains or something like that. You know? Yeah. And also somebody commented she was Brahmin too, so it would have been like, you know, small grain. It wouldn't have been long grain rice like that. It would have been high-class rice. You know? So she was just as good as sannyasi as her husband like that. One devotee, Gopal, you know, Hari Priya's husband in Grass Valley, you know? Mm-hmm. He was traveling in Nepal a long time ago, maybe like 1975 or something, kind of trekking. And then one guy, when the baron, you know, count died, and the news spread throughout the county. This guy was really a good guy. Nobody in his county went to bed hungry before, you know, he went to bed hungry. You know, really everybody loved him. And so the news was spreading very quickly because before sunrise he had to burn the body. So his guide said, "Do you want to see this?" He said, "Yeah, let's go." So they went there. And there's a big funeral pyre set up, and these priests are doing rituals, and his body is already there, all dressed up, and so many people are already there and crying and just holding each other. Then, you know, and it's coming, and the sun's going to come up soon, so they're kind of hurrying. Then this big murmur spreads through the crowd, and he said, "What is it?" He said, "That's the Rani, you know, the countess. She's coming." She's completely covered in white, her face too. And she had two, maidservants walking with her and some men, you know, escorting her. So he said he went there, and she went right up on the funeral pyre. Touched her husband's head, and then told the priest, you know, the torch, like that. And then the priest didn't want to do it. He was, like, shaking. But she's like, you know, the countess. So the guy hands it to her. She started the fire. She started chanting, "Jai Shri Ram, Jai Shri Ram." That's the test of japa. "Jai Shri Ram, Jai Shri Ram." The fire was getting higher. And he said he heard her. The fire, finally her voice is kind of like, you know, cracked like that. But it was so intense like that, you know. So this is chastity, right? Right? Okay? All the ladies here? Here you go. Yeah. But this is a culture where you're engaged, you're betrothed at, you know, how old was Sita when she was betrothed? 10 years old or something like that. Yeah. So the psychic bond is just incredible, you know. When the husband takes the wife's hand at that point, there's actually a psychic exchange, not just like theoretical thing. It's a psychic exchange. So the wife, for her husband to die like that, it's like, you know, raising the proper culture is more suffering not to go with him like that. Incredible culture. So this is Dharma, right? And there's so many Dharma Shastras. And Arjuna knows all these things like that. So now he has a clear idea. He can look at the thing and he can say, however you look at it, my duty is at this point to fight with these people and to regain the honor of Draupadi and the kingdom for Yudhisthira like that. Yeah, yeah, but still, you know, in 330, I think, is the first time when he really says this. You know, it's really basic. It's a whole summary of the Bhagavad Gita. It's finished. 330. Yeah, it's very simple. Yeah, yeah. Mayi sarvani karmani. Mayi. For me, sarvani. Karmani. Karma. Yeah. So in this chapter, karma is identified as dharma. You might say dharma is more the character of things and karma is more the activity of things. But there's kshatriya karma, vaishya karma, shudra karma, like that, stri karma, right? It's not just like a action-reaction thing. There's karma for different people, the way you're supposed to act. So here he's saying, therefore Arjuna, surrendering all your works unto me with full knowledge of me, without desire for profit, with no claim or proprietorship, free from lethargy, fight. So it's exactly the same as the definition of Buddha Yoga, huh? Right? Without desire for profit, right? No claim for proprietorship of the results, right? And free from lethargy. Don't be attached to not doing your duty, right? Fight. This verse clearly indicates the purpose of Bhagavad Gita. The Lord instructs that one has to become fully Krishna conscious to discharge his duties, as if in military discipline. Such an injunction may make things a little difficult. Nevertheless, duties must be carried out with dependence on Krishna, because that is the constitutional position of the living entity. The living entity cannot be independent of the cooperation of the Supreme Lord, because the eternal constitutional position of the living entity is to become subordinate to the desires of the Lord. Arjuna was therefore ordered by Sri Krishna to fight as if the Lord were his military commander. And one has to sacrifice everything for the goodwill of the Supreme Lord, at the same time discharge prescribed duties without claiming proprietorship. Yeah. So that's it. You know, kind of finished. After that, there's so many things about, you know, different ways to surrender to Krishna as a yogi, as a pious person, different ways to know who Krishna is, and, you know, like that. More detail like that. Yeah. But basically, it's as far as I can see, this is the Bhagavad Gita is kind of like, right? The main idea is finished right here, like that. Of course, you know, who is Krishna? Mayi, this always a big question. Because George Bush may also say, right, you know, vote for me, surrender for me, you know. Everyone's saying that, pretty much. Well, do it for me. But who is this Mayi? So does Krishna reveal more in Bhagavad Gita who he is? Where? Yeah? What are those called? That group of things. I'm the taste of water, I'm the light of the sun. Yeah. Yeah, vibhuti mat sattva. Yeah. Or pantheistic manifestations. The taste of water, the fragrance of the earth, the light of the sun. I try to make up japa programs on the PowerPoint with about one image every 3.5 seconds, coming like that. Yeah, probably japa chanting in the background. So I was taking pictures of Krishna. And I said, oh, hey, why not? Pictures of, you know, the wind, you know, the sun, kings, you know, looking for, with the Yahoo search for Raja. And they got me about, you know, a few Rajas there. I put them up there like that. And the wind, got some nice, interesting pictures like that. And it's really impressive. You're chatting around, you look at these things. Wow, it's a fact. You know, Krishna is these things. They're very impressive. Good meditation like that. Yeah. And so then after that, how else does he explain himself? He explains himself in pantheistic form. That's a lot of that's in what chapter?
10.
Yeah. And after that?
Universal form.
Yeah. Which is Paramatma, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. How he pervades and maintains everything, the Paramatma feature. And then after that, he reveals himself as?
There is no one above the animal.
Yeah.
Lord's material nature.
Yeah, it's Bhagavan, right? That supreme person like that. Yeah. So this is the same sequence we find in Sukadeva Goswami's explanation in the second canto, right? You know, the first step in God realization, which is to appreciate the universal form and meditate on that, and then the Lord in this Lord in the heart, and finally pure devotional service, the change in heart, like that. Sat, Chit, Ananda. Pantheism, mysticism, monotheism. What else we got? Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. It's the same sequence. And people, you'll see, when you're preaching, you meet people on different levels like that. Some people are karmis. They believe the satisfaction comes from? Yeah, some kind of material arrangement, some kind of condition like that. And people above the karmis, you find these jnanis, who are Brahma bodies, and they appreciate, no, there's more to life than that, and there's something, you know, something, right? It's not clear, though, that's the whole point. Something, we see it in so many ways like that. But this is not it, but this is like, you know, in the fall when the leaves are lying on the ground, and there's, you know, there's like, they're wet, and you can just smell there, and the fire burning, yeah, that's more than just atoms and molecules, brother. That's, yeah. Okay, join the Sierra Club, sign up right here, you know. Yeah. And so many philosophers like that. Well, Walt Whitman, you know Walt Whitman, right? Any quotations from Walt Whitman?
Journey your soul to India.
He didn't go, but he said that. Yeah. Yeah. He said life is a spiral. You know, it goes higher and higher like that. I meet the same men, the same women, again and again. The slave running for freedom, being shot by the master, is my body. You know, this and that. You know, on and on like that. Very intense. Come with me, brother. I go into the dying man's room. I chase out the doctors. I throw open the windows. I say, throw your arms around my neck, brother. I will not let you down. Come out with me on the road. Come out of this house you built for yourself or somebody else you built for you. The road is good. I've tested it. You know, we'll walk together, comrades, to the end. It's real sannyas, impersonal sannyas, dharma.
When I heard the learned astronomer.
Yeah. No.
I don't know the whole. You know, when I heard the learned astronomer, when all the facts and figures were weighed before me,
yeah.
When I heard him to great acclaim as he lectured in the lecture room,
yeah.
You know, I suddenly became sick, and and then I had to walk out, and then I gazed up in perfect silence at the stars.
Yeah, we'll rub our back against the river. We'll drink the water from the river. We'll eat the fruits from the trees. You know, you'll see me again somewhere. You'll know me by my emblems, a good pair of walking shoes and a waterproof overcoat. clear path. So the various sannyas dharma, which you find in all the Vedas like that. He said, life is a spiral. It goes up, up. Same people, same situations, again and again, but higher and higher. Where does it go? I don't know. But it goes someplace good. Yeah? So how do we classify him? Brahmavadi. Maybe coming to Paramatmavadi.
He's a vegetarian.
Well, it's natural. Yeah. But it's easy to be deviated because you haven't got a real scientific knowledge of things. You can become confused like that. Yeah. So progress, you know. And Bhagavad Gita, as far as I can appreciate, doesn't go much beyond, really, the focus is karma yoga. I mean, it shows even the two-armed form, somyabhapu, right? But it doesn't, you know, doesn't give any detail or anything else like that. So it's like, you know, there. So it's kind of my comprehension. Here Krishna's giving a lot of what is examples from Sankhya. And it's Socrates, when he's about to, you know, drink the poison, he gives the same, many of the same, same arguments like that, you know. You know, for example, you see, you know, he's there. It's very nice. The Phaedo, it's the last dialogue with Socrates. And it's very nice to read it. It's very inspiring, actually, compared to the Bhagavad Gita and stuff like that. It's very, so similar. You know. So he says, you know, first time he sends the ladies home because they're all crying. And I said, oh, okay, now I can die in peace. And his disciples start crying. He said, God, I sent the women home. Now you all cry. We're sorry, Socrates. He says, so what are you so sad about, you know? I said, a real philosopher actually is happy for this day. You know, he can leave this body. He said, if there was not an injunction against suicide, a real philosopher would leave his body earlier, like that. And he says, if the poison's here, and now we'll talk about death seriously, like that. So he says, can I go ahead and take the poison and leave? And you know, he said, well, how can you be so sure that the soul is different than the body? Right? And he says, well, look at it this way, you know. Does something gross ever come, something fine ever come from something gross? Like that. You say, well, no, you know. Or does it, you know? So he said, well, they give the example, what about a violin? Right? A violin's made of wood, glue, cat guts, and this fine, you know, sound comes out of it. Like that. So you're saying that there must be a soul which is different than the body because intellect, aesthetics, beauty, poetry, honor, dignity, they all come out of the body, but the body's made of fat and blood, like that. So it must be something fine in the body. But a violin produces this beautiful, fine music. And it's made of gross elements. So what do you say, Mr. Philosopher? It's the same argument, whether it's DNA, RNA, or cat guts and wood. It's the same argument, right? Yeah, it's all something gross combined.
Somebody's playing the violin.
Ah! Yeah. So Socrates says, very good argument, and if I couldn't actually satisfy your doubts, I'm not worthy of the name of philosopher, like that. He said, but you're forgetting one thing. What's that? The violin maker, he says like that. Yeah. So then they go through many arguments like that, back and forth, and you find the same arguments in the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada gives the same ones. He says, oh you, antivirus, which if you speed it up means antivirus. Oh you, antivirus. Have you seen perfect beauty? Okay, in this life, yeah. This guy's crazy on the altar there. Have you seen perfect justice in the court?
No.
Now we can talk really reality here. What else? Perfect justice, you know. So he goes through these things like that, and the guy is saying, no. He's never seen Radha Govinda and Radha Madan Mohan like that. And he says, but you have this idea, don't you? He goes, well, yes. He said, therefore, we must have existed someplace before where these things existed. Like that. Prabhupada says, if there is no God, then where from this idea is coming? Yeah, it's the same. I think it's the a priori argument. They're so classical. They have different names like that. One is a priori, a posteriori, like that. So he goes through all these logical arguments like that, and very, very good. I mean, actually, you can really become peaceful. And then he starts talking about the body. He says, every act of sense indulgence, but back up. Then he says, therefore, the soul must have existed someplace before. Now, he says, you know, exactly what today's verse says, which is, what, 227?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's finishing off here. 127? No, it's 127.
27.
Yeah, it was on 127. Yeah. Yeah, and the unavoidable, you know, so Socrates says, There is a very ancient doctrine. There is a very ancient doctrine which says that all living souls come from dead souls, and all dead souls come from living souls. So strict, you know, reincarnation and a very ancient doctrine. And this is the actual verse that Socrates heard thousands of miles away, like that. Yeah. So then, how we leave the body? How do we take our next position? The three modes of nature talks about that, right? You die as mudha janma. You die in the mode of ignorance. You take mudha janma. You take birth as an ass or a biker, I guess, in San Jose. These guys. See these guys. Yeah. Men were very nice, actually, but they're really, you know, kind of gross. Yeah. So he says every act of excessive sense indulgence or rejection, right, is another nail that nails the pure soul to the tree of the body, like that. You know, one more gulabjimam than you need, right? A little extra hot water in the shower in the morning, like that, you know? Yeah, illicit sex, okay, the whole, you know, like that, intoxication, right? Until finally you become just, you know, entangled in the body, right? So there's no chance of getting out of it. You can't get out of it as long as you have these attachments. You can't, you know what you do, right? Okay, but now I got this attachment, now I got this attachment, and now, okay, it's like, yeah, see, every nail, right? Every nail. So is there a verse in Bhagavad Gita which talks about the same thing? As we indulge in these things, we become more attached, more entangled. I don't know. Yeah. So it's in the second chapter?
That's the third chapter. Yeah. 262.
Yeah. So while contemplating the objects of the senses, one becomes attached. And then he's more than contemplating, but actually, okay, contemplation is also a voluntary activity. We may have so many dirty thoughts, right, in America. Yes, because you see always dirty advertisements, always dirty language, and it's just surrounding us. It's very, you know, gross, you know, place like that, nasty place. You know. And so, but these thoughts come, but it's another thing to entertain them. Hey, sit down, have a seat, stay for a while. Here's a cigar and some brandy. No, they come, okay, but then you just like, you know. But if while contemplating, and not to see that activity is coming, but actually contemplating, and that's the actual activity beginning like that, you become attached, and then you know, it's harder then to pull back the body, but you can do it. Then, you know, mode of goodness, mode of passion, mode of ignorance, like that, you become involved. So Socrates says, you know, anybody who dies in this fashion, is he going to depart free and unfettered to live forever with the gods? And his disciples say, no, Socrates. Yeah. No, he becomes gross and heavy until he cannot see anything but that which is gross, corporal and material. And those who are violent, selfish, and greedy, they come back as animals like, you know, like hawks and eagles and vultures. And those who are good and sociable, they come back as honeybees and nice people. So that's the same as Bhagavad Gita, the three modes of nature. But then Bhagavad Gita says after that, what does it say?
Right?
Huh?
Oh, after what?
Above even birth in the mode of goodness.
Brahma-bhuta.
Yeah. It says that also the one can take transcendental birth and transcend the modes of nature. Yes, in the mode of goodness, you take birth in the mode of goodness. It's higher, it's elevating, but you have to go beyond even that thing. So Socrates says the same thing. He says only those who are accustomed to the philosophical principle can leave this world completely free and unfettered like that. You know? So he goes beyond. It's so parallel. The same idea. You know. That's why, you know, these are nice for preaching in different. You know. One day I used Walt Whitman, Shakespeare, and Socrates all the same day. I was like an ecstasy.
Like, you know. Just done it here.
Okay, those are three different programs. Three different programs. Like they all came up like that. You know, wow. Yeah. And Mike, that's kind of the idea, is to show people that what we're presenting is American. You know, this is classical ideas from Western culture. It's not something different like that. You know? But you've forgotten your own culture like that. You know how George Washington died? Maybe all us Americans should follow his example, no? You know?
He died? He had bad teeth.
No. there's a nice magazine called American Heritage. The older issues were better, but really good stories. You know? So George Washington was got sick in the afternoon. He was going around, but it got worse, and he started having a problem, and people realized this is getting bad, you know. So they started calling the neighbor, the family, and some doctors came and put some leeches on him and tried to lower his blood pressure and this and that, but it's getting worse. So he adjusted his last will and testament a little bit like that. He gave freedom to all the slaves after he died. And then he started reading the Bible, right, good and loud. So George Washington went out hearing Krishna Katha, like that. And that was an American tradition, it really was. You know, back to Jack, I mentioned him. His wife's father was a Christian preacher, and he was there when her mother died, and she went out singing hymns. She was singing Christian hymns, and her voice kind of cracked, and she died like that. Yeah? So it's universal, Krishna Katha, right? A universal religion like that. So George Washington died, you know, listening to Krishna Katha, some sort of it like that. Yeah? So it's good enough for him. So this is the same thing, right? But finally, in the Phaedo, Socrates says, okay, we've gone through all these a priori, a posteriori, all these arguments, everything else like that. Are you satisfied now? Can I just drink the poison now? So they look at each other, and their leader Antiphorus, says, well, Socrates, you know, in your presence, nobody can have any logical argument about anything, you know. But, just like little children, you know, your mother shows you there's no monsters under the bed, you're staying in your aunt's house for the weekend, and you know, big house, and they put you in bed, and there's no monsters under the bed, there's no monsters in the closet, but then she closes the door, and you hear some creaking noises, and you think, oh my God, there's monsters under the bed. So you pull the covers over your head. It's something, Bill Crosby is saying something, I think that monsters can't go through covers like that. It's coming out. Yeah. So they say it's just like that. It's just like, logically, we know what you're saying is true, but still we have this fear that the soul just kind of evaporates like dew in the morning. It doesn't exist anymore. And therefore, we should hang on to life at any cost like that. It doesn't matter what evil thing we do, and enjoy it while we got it. So Socrates says, Om Tat Sat. Yeah, very interesting. He says, yes, it's impossible to come to a real conviction of the immortality of the soul that is different than the body, just by gyan, right? Therefore, you must apply the words of the soothsayer, self-realized philosopher, every day. And there are several in Greece and the surrounding countries like that. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Yeah.
We were just reading Lord Kapiladeva and Devahuti.
Yeah.
And Devahuti says that it seems practically impossible to separate the soul from the body because they've been intertwined for so long that, you know, practically they're one.
Yeah.
And so how is it even possible to do this? Lord Kapiladeva says the same thing that you just quoted, that he said, hearing over a long time.
Yeah.
A long period of time. Hearing,
yeah. Sincerely.
Gradually one will become separated from the body. And I think he gave the example of how bhakti works like that just as food is naturally digested in the stomach and distributed so similarly by the bhakti yoga process, specifically hearing, then gradually one's misconception about being the body will become dissipated.
Burned up at the root. But it is. It's a fantastic endeavor. It probably says we come to the human body after hundreds of millions of lifetimes. I mean, how many lifetimes have we been bacteria? Like that. You live for 30 minutes, maybe, you know, like that. You know. Yeah. So all that karma is there, right? Karma. It's the bhakti yoga process, hearing from authority, burning it up. You know. It's amazing, too. I mean, you think after so many years how much progress I've made, you know. But actually, you see, well, my mind and body haven't changed so much. You may be still inclined to the same stupid things, you know. But at heart, I've changed. I've seen that sometimes in intense yoga. See, yeah, at heart I've changed. My mind's probably going to be the same way until I die, pretty much like that. But when I die, it's going to have nothing to grab onto because there's going to be no roots left. Right? Like that. So it touches the heart. You know, Krishna arranges that, heartfelt experiences, right? Puts you in situations that, you know, keep like, you know, bhakti yoga. It's an external situation, but it touches your heart. You know, it burns at the root, like that. So it's his conclusion also. I think you might say that, practically speaking, every single great acharya does the same thing. He gives so many processes of yoga. Krishna's given so many. I mean, people take so many things out of Bhagavad Gita. I mean, they say, you do your duty without attachment to result. That's the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita. They make up bags for all the teachers in the school and have it written on them. I know, in a place like that. You know? But that's not the conclusion. Conclusion is, do your result for me, right? And also, who am I? You know, so much detailed knowledge about Krishna, how we can meditate on him like that. You know? And so, but the most confidential form of religion is hearing from, you know, from a self-realized soul. Lord Chaitanya is talking Ramananda Roy, right? He proposes so many things. He says, no, no, no. And what's the first thing he accepts? Yeah.
Just stay wherever you are. Don't move.
Yeah.
Just listen and hear.
Yeah, whatever position you are in the Varnashram system, just stay there and hear from the self-realized soul. You know? So I probably have a suspicion. This is nice, then, with talking to a bona sincere Mohammedan, you know, finding these concordances like that. But I have a real suspicion you're going to find that, you know, Muhammad's saying the same thing. He's giving different religions, different yogas for people on different levels like that. You know? But, you know, most religion is honor amongst thieves. Look, you know, to make it more simple, you rob on that side of the town, I'll rob on this side of the town. Yeah, you know? So that's what most dharma is. It's just, you know, we're all thieves here, but let's just kind of divide things up so to the mode of goodness. Then we begin to see what's going on. That robbery is not good, even if it's at its best, it's a bad idea. You know? And then you go from the higher level like that, from being a karmi to being a dhyani. You know? But the final, the ultimate religion is, you know, well, no, hear from me. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's Bhagavad Gita. Kirtiyantas mam. Yanto mam. Yeah. So several verses like that. And of course, we're so fortunate that Prabhupada, you know, brings it out, touch renew. He makes this point here for me. And then it stimulates our relationship. And then the different bhavas start to develop. Our feelings start to develop as Krishna's friend, as Krishna's mother, as Krishna's father, as Krishna's servant, as Krishna's, you know, grass, as Krishna's lover. These different bhavas, sthayi bhavas, start to manifest like that. And at that point, it's just, at that point, even if somebody quotes all the scripture in the world about what you should do, you'll reject it. Because you're like, you know, you're with Krishna, you know. It's only a matter of maturity, intensity. It's all left for the bhava to go to prema like that. You know? So can Bhagavad Gita take you all the way to prema, Krishna prema?
No.
No, says no, says yes.
Gives the partner, but it doesn't.
Yeah. It's there, but it's not emphasized. It's not as obvious like that. I mean, somebody can read, I would say the gopis also hear Bhagavad Gita and Vrindavan. They want to hear everything about Krishna. So, but they're hearing it like, you know, what kind of emotions they're feeling when they're hearing Bhagavad Gita. can you give the class, Bhagavad Gita class night to the gopis? Please, move your start. You know, it's like, oh, okay, yeah, sorry, no. Yeah, okay.
The story of the illiterate Brahmin who was trying to read the Bhagavad Gita and he was crying, and then Chaitanya asked him, so that in that way he was getting prema just by envisioning
this one idea.
This Krishna has become Arjuna's chariot.
Just from the picture on the cover. Yeah, how kind he is. Yeah. But generally speaking, that's why, you know, you find the same things in Kapila Dev's Bhagavatam, you find the same things in Sudha Goswami's Bhagavatam, you find the same thing again and again, it's the same thing. Yeah? But from different angles, for different levels, for different, you know, different presentations like that. Yeah? So, you know, we go on, if you understand Bhagavad Gita, which is karma yoga, I have to do my duty. Like, I understand that. I can't run away, and, you know, it's really troublesome. The Prabhupada says every intelligent person knows sex, illicit or illicit, is a problem. It's problematic. It's a problem, right? Okay, you know. So you want to go away. One devotee, he wrote to Prabhupada, take sannyas, like that. I want to leave my wife, take sannyas. And Prabhupada says, sometimes the fish is attracted to the bait on the hook. And he bites the bait, and he gets caught. And he suffers like that. And he wants to get off the hook. but it is not so easy to get off the hook. Your request for sannyasa is denied. Go back and take care of your wife. So it's your dharma, like that, you know. For ladies, the same thing. You know, if you're a single girl, no problems. Now I gotta, you know, do what your husband says. Okay, you know, So, and I know, okay, I have to do my duty. And what is it? So many descriptions in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, so many details like that about practical duty. But simultaneously cultivate Krishna consciousness, right? Within that, it's not something different or higher than it. No, I, you know, no, whatever my duty is, I cultivate, you know, the relationship to Krishna, right? Like that, Why do you work?
Money, right?
Isn't that
based? The bumper sticker, I owe,
Mostly, but of course, some people like to find a job they feel is useful in society and is satisfying, like that too. But okay, so therefore, what should we do? We should make money for Krishna. We should be enthusiastic about it, to make it in a good way, to make a lot of it, you know, we can use for Krishna. So no problem then. You become as good a karmi as everybody else in your work like that. They're all out for the money to make profit, but you're like thinking about, okay, if we can cheat on this and make more money for Krishna, okay, but what's going to happen, this and that? You know, okay, so let's cheat a little bit. And it begins to appreciate, wow, this guy's, he's making money like us, he's after it like us, but something a little bit better about the way he's doing it than what we're doing it like that. This seems like ultimately he's going to be happier than we are. And ultimately, the company is going to prosper better under his idea than our idea, like that, you know? Yeah, we can do some short. One devotee was working for a farmer, and the big commercial farmer. He told him, you know, put this in the, fumigation spreader and go spread it on all these vegetables, whatever they are. So he was about to do it as some kind of, poison, antibiotics, like that. And they said, oh, don't spread this in the vegetables at least like 5 days before harvest. So he showed it to the guy and said, we're going to harvest this like 2 days, aren't we? He said, yeah, but do it anyway. He said, but it says, it's, you know, you shouldn't do that. The farmer told him, he said, hey, we're not going to eat those vegetables. Yeah, and that's the kind of food you're buying in the market. And so, you know, that kind of business, when you begin to figure out, like, maybe we do it this way and that way, on a long-term basis, we're going to prosper more. We're going to have more income, and it's going to pass on for generations. So even if you begin to do your duty for the money, for Krishna, it all, you find out how the roots connected like that. And everybody else, most people, you know, most people probably have to say 80% of Americans will appreciate what you're doing is right and they'll accept it. You know, Diet for New America, John Robbins with his whole book about vegetarianism, animal rights. It's a fantastic book. So he was talking to one farmer one time, a guy was raising cattle and dairy and killing him, everything else like that. And about the whole, he was investigating the whole thing like that before he wrote the book. And so halfway through the afternoon, the guy just kind of blew up and said, he said, this is a difficult enough job, but people like you just make it so much more difficult, you know? And they're angry and went on. So that time they're having dinner that night in that guy's house afterwards, and the guy started crying a little bit. He said, I'm really sorry for what I said to you today. I was just thinking about it. It wasn't right. He said, look, I know, and most of the people I know this is not right. You're taking care of these animals and then killing them like this and that and stuff. I said, but what else can I do? You know, I got to take care of my family, this and that, like that. So most people in America, most people, they just want a solution. They want a way out. If you can start showing them that, you know, then you'll become chief executive officer. Everybody here will become chief executive officer. I bless you all to become chief executive officers of every business you're working for. We'll see. Within 2 years. That's quick. Why not? You know? And then the whole business changes like that. You know? Kridananda Maharaj said, there's so many good things happening in ISKCON with devotees, and it's difficult for the demons to figure out where to turn their cannons. Because everybody is becoming a devotee, been doing something individual like that. You know? So this is, the Bhagavad Gita is really focusing on this level of karma yoga. And once you understand that, I've got to do my duty, and you've got to work out, practically speaking, what, to what level? So you can chant 16 nice rounds, you can follow the four principles strictly. If your karma has worked out to that level. Some people know, probably I can't stop, you know, I got to take coffee because that's, you know, otherwise I have no impetus to work. So I go there, I drink a, you know, a cup of coffee with some sugar, and I'm too jangled to do anything, so I smoke a cigarette. Right? Isn't this it? This is basically the, you know, the how to maintain, you know, a little more coffee, a little less cigarette, a little more, you know, yeah, this is the basic thing of motivation. And then you're just doing it, you know, kind of mindlessly. They knew for so long that they could put, like, space shuttles on the back of bombers or cargo transports, take them up to the edge of outer space, and then they shoot off like that. You know, such a simple launching procedure. But all these engineers were designing these rockets, you know, to get this thing up there. Saturn 3C, it has three pods on it. Each one produces 250,000 pounds of thrust. You can imagine your car, like you step on the accelerator. You know, try and catch me, cops. You know, 250,000 pounds of thrust, each one. So times three, how much is that? Yeah, 750,000 pounds of thrust. The thing is about 30 stories tall. Walter Cronkite, remember him? This famous reporter said when they went to launch these things for the first time, they moved all the, you know, television, the guys back like about 2 miles. And they were joking, they weren't sure if the rocket was going to go up or Florida was going to go down like that. Yeah. When they were assembling the thing, the building was so big that the United Nations building could have gone on its side and slid through the door like that. And they had thunderstorms forming inside the building. It was so big like that. So they had to put in a special air conditioning system. But all this is like, was it seven people lying on their back on top of this 30-story office building and somebody pushing the button like that, you know, to get them at this level they could have done with just a cargo plane. And they knew it. But the whole thing is produced from coffee and cigarettes. These guys engineering, you know. If it won't work, just add an extra 25,000 pounds of thrust. We'll get it up there somehow like that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So there's all this, you know. Okay, so what is karma? Karma yoga, when you can follow four principles and chant 16 rounds. If you know, and Krishna will support you, right? Krishna will support you like that. You know, what's it say? What's that one now? Rakshabe ashvabe rakshabe Krishna, ashvasha rakshabe Krishna. You can go through the whole folio and never find where that's at. It's a nectar of instruction. Avashya Rakshabe Krishna. Krishna has given me this duty, so certainly he'll support me. He'll give me everything I need to do it, like that. Krishna wants me to follow the four principles, chant 16 rounds, so therefore he'll give me a job where I can do it. So therefore, if this job is not going to let me do it, I'm not going to take that job. And I won't be afraid, you know, like that. Avashya Rakshabe Krishna. It's from a song by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Like Krishna has given me this duty, so therefore certainly he'll give me everything I need to fulfill it. So A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, okay, he's an Achari, he says, you do this japa mala, you know, follow your four principles, okay. So then I'll find a job where I can do that. You know, yeah. I know so many devotees, software engineers, who spend about, you know, 60% of their time working for the company they're working for, and about 40% of their time reading Bhagavad Gita or doing temple projects. One devotee has, Linux? Yeah, he has the whole Bhagavatam in Linux, so from a distance of about 10 feet, it looks like he's doing programming like that. When you come closer, you're reading, guys reading this. What is this? What is this? Those aren't command characters. Sorry, I remember. Yeah. And now it's starting to spread to other people in the same business. Like, I won't say what company this is. Starting to spread to other people, like they're getting copies of it like that. And then they're fulfilling all their deadlines. I mean, they could work faster and get the work done faster in advance and make more money. Yeah, you know, I satisfied him. But he said, oh, I make enough money. You know, why should I do that? So to sit here and be here, and, you know, about 40% of the time I'll just do, you know, devotional service, temple projects like that. Yeah. So you find, you know, so everybody's happy. Yeah. His bosses are happy, everybody. Yeah. And he doesn't have to work 8 hours a day like that, like an ass. Yeah. So if you understand karma yoga, then okay, go on studying Bhagavad Gita, but now from a higher level. And what's the guide? Srimad Bhagavatam, right? Yeah. Now you see how Prabhupada uses it, you know? He quotes certain verses, right? And now you see in Srimad Bhagavatam, you see how the master, right? How the master uses, right? You know, Bhagavad Gita, right? So whenever you see a Bhagavad Gita verse in the Bhagavatam, you can stop and, you know, do I know this one? Mayata tamidam sarvam jagadavyakta mortena matstani sarabhutane nachaham te sabhasitaha. What's the other one? Another one, it also begins with Maya. It's 7:10. Yeah, Maya Dyakshina Prakriti. Almost identical, huh? Yeah. So I always thought, what are these verses? They're kind of like, you know, for technical things. The Prabhupada was quoting them again and again. So I finally realized that they're like, this is Achinta Beda Beda Tattva. Yeah, this is where Achinta Beda Beda Tattva is established. Like that. Yeah? I maintain everything but I'm not there. So by reading and seeing how Prabhupada was using it, finally some verses just like I understood what he was talking about, why he was using them like that. Yeah. And then, you know, so many more details, different perspectives in that. And you know, advanced study of Bhagavad Gita. So any questions, comments, complaints, or donations? Generally greatly advanced pundit over there. Yes, sir. Yeah.
This verse.
Yeah.
The at least among Americans, you know, who aren't familiar with ancient doctrines, and it seems like it makes sense that for one who's taken birth, death is certain.
Yeah.
But the other side of the equation, for one who's died, birth is certain. Where does that, you know, how? I guess it's not very intuitive to modern materialistic America.
No, I mean, you've got to be detached a little bit to see that. Or I'll smoke a lot of marijuana. Or take a lot of LSD. Unfortunately, when I was in university, I was trying everything, you know. So I remember one time in an intoxicated state. Bhaktivedanta even says this. And sometimes, yes, these things can give, you know, they can disorient your connection to your body and mind to such a degree that if you have enough intelligence, you'll actually realize I'm not the body and mind. Like that. This is something else going on now, like that, you know? But you have to have enough karma in the mode of goodness to be able to see that. Otherwise, you just become attached. Person in the mode of ignorance, when he gets intoxicated, he fights. Person in the mode of goodness, when he gets intoxicated, he laughs and enjoys. Person in the mode of goodness, he just kind of, goes to sleep and gives it up, you know, like that. So if you have enough karma in the mode of goodness, then you can begin to see, that's not my mind and body, because he's influencing the mind and senses like that in different ways like that. So at one point I was there looking at a fraternity brother from Theta Chi fraternity in this intoxicated state, and I was as if it went through my mind like that. I mean, I probably had come in contact with some reasoning like this from some kind of yoga tradition or something else like that. But I could see, well, hey, he's going to change like this, he's going to change like that. But I could just see, yeah, but the consciousness is always going to be there, and he's going to be conscious of what happens when he dies. Like that, you know? So yeah, by introspection, these kind of things like that, a little bit of a hint, logic, you can understand that something has to happen. Rebirth is something else. I mean, you take birth again, but, you know, And I don't know, again, it's just the media, was 87% of all Americans believe in God, if you ask them, but amongst the people who control the media, it's down to like about 47% or something. So the communication atmosphere, bookstores, radio, and television, everything else is controlled and is totally secular, right? You know, secular atmosphere. That's not what most people believe and what they're experiencing. So I have a suspicion a lot of Americans and stuff in this atmosphere, when we start talking about these things, they'll like, you know, wake them up. They'll start, especially give them prasadam. But I agree. The thing is, you know, birth, death, disease, and old age. So birth is like, you know, death, disease, and old age, people can appreciate. But birth is kind of like, wow.
Go ahead. I was just thinking that, for those who don't believe that there's a soul that's like the, like, observer of everything, that's staying the same, they have explanations, like Buddhists have this doctrine of no soul, anatma. Or David Hume has a similar. They have this idea that there's not like a person in your head like watching the movie screen.
Yeah.
But there is consciousness. There are the symptoms of the soul, and what that is it's constantly going in. It's like a fire, right? It's burning, and it's not the same. It seems to be the same fire, but it's really burning up chemicals constantly. So it is. The doctrine is that there's something there that's constantly dying and being born again.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it seem to still be, to have any continuity even in this life.
So Bhagavad Gita Krishna says about, says somewhere in the second chapter, he says, but even if you believe,
that's the previous verse.
Yeah, okay. Even if you believe this doctrine that this continuous change is going on, still there's no reason to lament for fighting your relatives. So Prabhupada says in the purport, this is such a low philosophy that Krishna, even though he's being sarcastic, because Arjuna's not even going to accept this in his present condition. Like that. He's going to say, well, God don't believe that, you know, like that. So Bhagavad Gita, at least in terms of that level, it kind of touches on this philosophy as kind of like unacceptable trash. Again, this is a gyan level again, trying to approach these things and talk about them and distinguish them like that. Because you can also, you know, when you were a child, you can also have memories like that and relate to these things, and this was me. It wasn't, you know, somebody else or something like that. But again, this, you know, very, I was reading today, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's refutation of Buddhism and Lotu Tanya's in South India. And he goes through logical arguments like that, but he says there's no limit to this. You know, how much you can construct these logical things and construct a logical counter-log. You know, for every single logical argument you can give, somebody else can construct another counter-logical argument, which is going to come up with another solution like that. Then the granite section of the Vedas, it says that there's no limit to computational mathematics. So therefore, at some point, just take the measurement and make the calculation like that. You know, I mean, they're still publishing Leibniz's systems of mathematics. He died, I don't know how many years ago, 400 years ago? Yeah, Leibniz. He was contemporary of Newton. He couldn't move for like 2 months. He was in bed, and he was just generating mathematical systems in his mind, like that, writing them down. So there's no limit in how much people can like come up with different arguments like that and so on, you know. But the main point is that with a little bit of sobriety, you know, and a little bit of perception, you can see that, yes, in all these cases, I'm the observer of this fire, you know. And if you specifically take a little bit of fortune and take shelter of Lord Chaitanya and engage in chanting and kirtan and stuff like that, you can see it. Whatever can come from the mind, from speculation, whatever can come from the senses, from experience, I'm different in this position right now. I had experience, right? You're doing the bhakti yoga. At some point, you come to the point, you say, this, you know. Anyway, I mean, you can talk about mind and senses the way you want to, you know, but it's always falls within a certain, you know, area, like that, what they are. And these are the people who make these arguments aren't psychologists, you know. You know, they actually haven't done a study of the mind and senses in terms of their own discipline, like that. Yeah? I mean, you can usually get them right away in that. Have you had any formal training in psychology? Well, no. Maybe take a little bit, you know. Because it's, you know, it's Buck Rogers' ideas. Even psychologists, they know, you know, about these levels of, you know, sense perception, detachment, like that. Mm-hmm. So, what about yours? Why don't you? Everybody?
Kind of a simple question, but someone asked me it last week, and I wasn't quite sure. I have some intuition on it, but this reincarnation, and
Yeah. Someone
was asking me about the book and the picture where, you know, the person turns into a tree, and wondering about this jump between higher and lower forms. It's mm-hmm. a little easier to understand going through an animal.
Yeah.
How does it work? Like jumping from, say, an amoeba to a doesn't seem like it would go that fast.
No, it's, for example, like, I think that one of the best analogies is the change of automobiles, change of vehicles, like that. You've been living a certain way, and therefore, you know, you've got a certain income, a certain lifestyle, certain friends, you've got a certain kind of vehicle. You've got like a Mercedes or something, like that. But then you really fall into really bad habits, bad activities, and you start, you know, wasting your money and everything else, and you lose your job, your friends, people, you're such a rascal, people won't associate with you anymore, like that. And so as a wreck, or as whatever, you lose your Mercedes, and you got no money, no credit, everything else, so what, you're on the street in a pair of shoes, right? You know? Or you got a bicycle or a motorcycle or, you know, something like that, you know? So depending on, you know, your particular situation, usually we see when somebody finishes off their vehicle naturally from old age, they get a similar vehicle, right? Yeah.
I just turned on the memories and the new tape that came out.
Uh-huh.
One devotee was saying about how Prabhupada had commented that some of the camels
were
for the British Raj. You know, they were so puffed up and everything. And then, now you can see, but, you know.
Camels, idiots, fools.
Yeah, their arrogant nature.
They look like them, right?
He was like, hey, I knew that guy.
Lord so-and-so, yeah. Well, so what? Good body. That's okay. Yeah. Because it's complicated. It's like anything in life. You know, sometimes things move smoothly. Sometimes, yes, there are like, you know, punctuated changes. So usually we say, yeah, people who are tigers, lions, monkeys, and cows come into the human form of life in the mode of passion, ignorance, and goodness like that. Maybe you go out that way too. Yeah. Yeah. Okay? Yeah. Okay. Okay. That's it. For the law of Dharma here. I do my Dharma.
I have a question.
Okay, yes, sir. Yeah,
but it's meant for yesterday.
Okay.
I did not ask you yesterday. Can I ask you?
I guess so. I guess so.
I just said it, is there any reason?
He's a lawyer. You can ask him.
is there any reason that Lord Nityananda came before Chaitanya Prabhu and Balaram came before Krishna? Is there any reason why they come before Lord comes?
Not as far as I know. Because Lakshman was born after Ram.
Okay.
Oh yeah, okay. So there's, in this sense, maybe an esoteric reason, was that then Lakshman had to take Sita to the forest and abandon her in the forest, and like he didn't want to do it, you know. But Ram said, you're my younger brother, you must do what I say, and he said, okay, but I'm never going to take but as your younger brother again. So he became his older brother, and he couldn't tell him what to do after that. You know? Okay. So maybe that's the esoteric reason. They have all these things. After Krishna's pastimes were all finished, the story is that Krishna and Balaram were arguing who killed the most demons, like that. So they went to Lord Brahma to make a decision. Lord Brahma was called, oh my God, he made a decision between Krishna and Balaram. He thought about it, he said, oh, okay. He said, well, actually, Krishna killed more demons than you did, Balaram, but the ones you killed were more powerful than the ones he killed. Like that. Yeah. So good Jewish lawyer. Yeah. So you can stop here. So Prabhupada ki
jai.
Shishi Sandyarti ki jai. Sundarti ki jai.
Amma Prashekha Swami ki
jai.